Hey Tacoma, what's up? John Doherty here for Radio Tacoma's Climate Talk, the place where we talk about everything climate, always respectfully, ever striving to be fact-based, open to divergent perspectives, and always actively optimistic. And I might add, always seeking to bring it home to good old Tacoma. In this episode, we're going to be concluding our conversation with Dr. James Konka on the topic of nuclear waste. If we're going to have a fossil fuel-free future, is nuclear going to be a part of that future? And if so, what about the issue of nuclear waste? For me, one of the challenges in thinking about nuclear power is that it's easy for me to understand how a wood fireworks or a kerosene lamp. Nuclear power is in a whole different category, and realistically speaking, I'm never going to be able to fully understand how nuclear power works. So I'm not understanding. It's easy for me to be afraid. As humans, we don't do a good job of deciding what to be afraid of. Think about being afraid of flying when flying is magnitudes safer than other forms of transportation. What it adds up to is that I have to find voices who understand nuclear power deeply and who I trust in their opinions. And then, of course, sometimes there are countervailing voices, and ultimately I have to make up my own mind. If you feel any of these things, I'm hopeful that our conversation with Dr. Konka will be an asset in helping you to make up your mind. And remember, always, as we contemplate the future, we are not choosing between the perfect and the flawed. Everything in our human existence is imperfect in one way or the other, and I think we are merely trying to find the greatest good for the greatest number. So here we go with the second part of my conversation with Dr. James Konka on the subject of nuclear waste. Okay, so we're talking about waste. So there's the leftovers from building nuclear weapons. So what's the next form of waste that we want to talk about?
Okay. Low-level waste. Okay. So, and that's so low that you can just put it in a shallow landfill, a special shallow landfill, of which we have four in the United States. One at Hanford, one at Clive, Utah, one at Barnwell, I think it's South Carolina, and one in Texas, near Andrews.
So those are all functioning right now, and there's no problems with them.
No problem, because low-level waste is low-level waste. I mean, it's like no big deal. You know, medical waste, you know, a lot of the waste from bomb making is actually low-level waste. So, you know, it's no big deal. And that's the largest volume of waste we have is low-level waste. Okay, the smallest volume is spent nuclear fuel. We don't have much spent nuclear fuel from reactors. I mean, it's fit in one high school soccer field. I mean, give me a break. So, and not even fill it. Okay, so there's not much waste. Now the bomb waste is about, you know, about twice as much as commercial waste, and you know, it's both high level and transuranic. But what's happened weirdly, like at Hanford, is that it's been, you know, beginning in 1944 we started filling these tanks, and we stopped filling them in 83. So most of it is decayed away a lot. And we actually removed a bunch of the hotter stuff and put them in little capsules for use and research and stuff. And so there's no high-level waste left at Hanford. None. The high-level waste tanks that we are vitrifying at Hanford at great cost is not high-level waste. So why are we vitrifying them? It's like you only vitrify high-level waste. But this no longer high level waste. It's all
okay. I don't know what vitrifying means.
Ah, good question. We turn it into glass. So we turn it into glass logs. Now, the only reason we're doing that is because someone likes France. Okay. France vitrifies their waste, but they don't have bomb waste. They don't have anywhere near the kind of waste that we have. Completely different chemistry. So the people, especially Washington State Department of Ecology, I'm sorry, they are wrong, so wrong on this. They want to vitrify. And you don't vitrify low-level waste or transuranic waste. It's a waste. I mean, it's hard to vitrify, too, because this waste is not the right chemistry for glass. It likes to be in grout, cement. This loves to be in cement, okay? It performs much better than glass, and at a tenth of the cost.
Well, so why are we even doing anything with it? Why isn't it still just sitting there in barrels?
Well, it's in these big old tanks, and some of them are leaking, okay? Although the leakage is no big deal, but you know, if you don't just the consistency is like peanut butter, wet peanut butter with salt all over it. Okay, that's the consistency of this waste. Okay, so sometimes you get condensation, depending on the weather, you know, changes. You actually get condensation in these tanks, and the water drips, not very much, but it drips around, and then it can leak out of old tanks that are 80 years old, you know, 70, 80 years old, and then, you know, they'll leak into the ground. Not any big deal, okay, because the leakage is small, and once it gets in the ground, it's dilute like crazy, so there's a real risk from it. But hey, it sounds bad. So we originally wanted to just grout it and put it in big vaults in the ground. Great, wonderful. The Department of Ecology killed that. Then we wanted to grout it and send it to places like WIP, and then they kill that. And so now
I'm just curious about one thing. So Hanford's a federal facility, right? Right. So how does the Washington State Ecology Department get a say in what happens to the waste?
Very good question, politically. Okay. The federal government is in charge of radioactive waste. Okay. The states are in charge of toxic waste, non-radioactive waste, right? Like mercury and lead.
Yeah. Right?
Well, all of these wastes have stuff like that in them too.
Okay.
So you can't get a permit to put something on the road or to bury it or anything else if it has lead in it. Well, of course, there's lots of lead and other stuff and toxic, you know, even organic chemicals in these waste tanks up here because they used a lot of organic chemicals to separate the stuff. So there's a lot of toxic waste that the state's in charge of, but they're not in charge of rad waste. So if you could only have rad waste that was only radioactive material with none of the other stuff in it, then yeah, you could thumb your nose at the state. But 95% of it is not that. 95% of it is mixed waste.
Yeah.
We call it mixed waste. Yeah.
Nothing's ever as simple as it looks like it might be on the surface.
Yeah, absolutely. So anyway, so we have all this waste. We're not doing the right thing with it. We know what to do with it. I mentioned the Waste Isolation Pilot Project in New Mexico, WIP. It was designed and built for all of this. Okay, it was only politically permitted by the state for transuranic. Okay, so the state will not issue a permit to put spent fuel there or anything else. Now, NRC and DOE, well, DOE and NRC DOE facilities are regulated by DOE, not NRC. Commercial facilities are regulated by NRC. Now, it depends on the state. There are some that are regulate their own waste, but with NRC looking over the shoulders, and then there's some states that NRC does everything and the state doesn't do anything. Okay, we're one of those mixed states that we, you know, our Department of Ecology and NRC work together with DOE and all that kind of stuff. So there's tri-party agreements, there's, you know, legal statutory agreements that we've set up over the years, and the tri-party agreement, which was a terrible document, basically says, you know, we're going to vitrify this. But it was also assuming that Yucca Mountain was going to open in Nevada, okay, to take this waste. Yucca Mountain will never open in Nevada. It's a terrible rock. It's the wrong rock, okay? It's going to cost 10 times what we thought it was going to cost, so we're never going to get it built because we don't have the money.
So what's the status of it right now? I mean, is work going on there right now?
Yucca Mountain is dead, completely dead.
Nothing's happening there.
Nothing's happening. We did some work to, you know, drill the main tunnels and stuff, but no,
happened?
It was a political decision in 1987 by then Speaker of the House, Jim Wright from Texas, and Tom Foley, our old Tom Foley here from Washington State, who was House Majority Lead Senate Majority Lead at that time. And there was this new junior named Harry Reid, who'd just been elected, and Jim and Tom said, "Hey, Harry, it's yours." That was it. That was the sum total of the decision to put it in Nevada, in Yucca Mountain. And everyone, you know, all of us who've been working on that for years already, knew that was a terrible rock. It was a stupid rock. So we're going to have to do a bunch of engineered barriers, to re-engineer around the fact that we picked the wrong rock. Okay, the rock that WIP is in is a massive salt, fantastic rock. It takes a billion years for water to move an inch. Now, that's what you want. You want something that's going to totally isolate it for a billion years. You don't have to worry about it. Yucca Mountain, you're lucky if you get 10,000 years.
So I'm just curious. So how extensive is this salt formation down there at WIP?
It's 10,000 square miles and 6,000 feet thick.
Wow.
Okay. now, WIP is in the middle of the purest layer. It's about 2,100 feet down. It's only a, 16 square miles have been set aside. And when WIP is done with its present mission, it's only going to be using one square mile. So we got plenty of room. I mean, there's room is no problem because there's not much nuclear waste. Even all the high level waste, all the spent nuclear fuel, all the transuranic waste, it doesn't amount to much.
So when that thing was proposed, was there pushback from the populace around the area there about that facility going in?
No, the people around it loved it. They wanted it. I mean, I used to work with the mayor. He was it's kind of a Teddy Roosevelt kind of guy. He was funny, Bob Forrest. And because they're salt miners, the reason the salt's there, okay, the reason Carlsbad is there, Carlsbad is a German word for salt, basically, warm salt or something. I can't remember what it stands for. And so, it was settled by German miners in the late 1800s to mine salt, especially potassium chloride, which is a huge deposit there, which was rare outside of that time. So the mining industry was in the doldrums in the 70s when DOE was thinking about where to put this. And they heard about it, and the mayor went out to D.C. and said, "We'll take it." and all the people of Carlsbad said, "Yay," because suddenly they were employing miners, and it was the best job you could possibly have as a miner. My God, mining's dangerous. Not mining for DOE is not dangerous.
So it sounds like, you may have commented on this previously, but it seems like such an ideal place to put spent nuclear fuel. Why aren't we doing it?
Total politics, absolute politics.
So what are the politics?
The politics are not in my backyard, and you promised us you wouldn't do it.
I see. Yeah,
that's it. So in terms of the rest of the states, see, there's 32 states that have nuclear power reactors, they were promised by the Nuclear Waste Policy Act of 1982 that the federal government would take all that waste sometime, someplace, and put it in one place. And 1987 amendment said Nevada's going to be that place. And Nevada said, over our dead bodies, okay? Because it was a political decision. It's a lousy rock. And you couldn't get elected dog catcher after 1987 if you liked Yucca Mountain, if you supported Yucca Mountain. I mean, it was just absolutely, we're not going to do it. And the thing is, the state has to issue the permits, right? So they're just not going to issue the permits. So what's DOE going to do? In fact, I remember 1987, there was talk about, well, we'll put state troopers on one side of the border, and federal agents will be on the other side. And it's like, oh, give me a break. We're going to go to civil war over nuclear waste.
Okay.
Well, yeah, they were that serious.
Let's look downstream a little bit then. So let's say we significantly expand our nuclear generating capacity in the United States. What is that going to mean in the political environment that we live in for nuclear waste?
Not much, because again, it doesn't produce much waste. Nuclear fuel is a million times more energy dense than coal. So there's 11 million times less waste from nuclear than from coal to produce the same amount of energy. I mean, that's insane. And we're now developing, like Bill Gates, in Bellevue, is developing a fast reactor that will get 10 times more energy out of the same fuel. Okay, so my God, we'll even have less waste. So you could power America 100% nuclear, and nuclear waste would never amount to much. It would never be a big deal. All you have to do is expand WIP. But the people of New Mexico don't want to do that, because they said, you promised us you'd never take anything but transuranic waste here. And that was only a promise made under political pressure by Bill Richardson and Jeff Bingaman at the time.
So are there any other salt formations like that one in New Mexico in the United States?
Oh, yeah. Well, first of all, that's 10,000 square miles, so it goes into several states.
Okay, gotcha.
So, Texas easily, yeah, but we have lots of salt. We have more salt than anyone in the world. Germany tried to do salt. They did it wrong. They had a fairly thin anticlinally deformed, you know, pressure, you know, plate tectonics, whatever, deformed salt bed that had been mined in the past for salt. And they tried to use an old salt mine. Well, you don't use an old salt mine. That wasn't made correctly. It was made to make money. It's made to get salt out. It wasn't made to dispose of nuclear waste. You got to start from scratch. But they used this old salt mine, and they accidentally busted through into another formation that was very wet. And it's like, what are you doing? I mean, so they totally blew it. It's called Ase. And it's like, wait a second. You don't do that. You do what we did. You find the right rock, pure, unaffected by anything, and you design from the start a new mine that is meant for nuclear waste disposal. Then it's easy and
okay,
cheap.
Understood. Yeah. So you made reference to Bill Gates's nuclear ambitions. One of the things I've heard as a layperson is that the spent nuclear fuel that we've got right now has actually still got a lot of energy left in it. So is that true? And I've also heard that spent nuclear fuel can be used to fuel modern reactors. So what do I got right or wrong there?
No, you're right. You can use, first of all, right now with the reactors we have, we only put the fuel through once, and you only use 5% of the energy in it. That's it, 5%. Okay, 95% left. Okay. Now, a fast reactor uses almost 100%. So you're going to get 10 times the amount of energy out of it, but you need a fast reactor. We built fast flux test facility out here. Was a fast reactor. We had it running at Hanford for 10 years. Brilliant. We shut it down stupidly, like we do everything. When something's running great, we just like to shut it down, right?
Yeah.
So, but we showed it works. Yeah, you can do this. There's a little bit material science stuff needed. You need better silicon material to withstand high neutron fast fluxes. But hey, that's just an engineering thing, and that's what they're working on. So that's pretty easy.
Okay.
So there's a bunch of modern reactors out there. Some of them use pebbles. Some of them as a fuel. Some use old fuel. Some use new fuel. Some use thorium. We got tons of thorium. But, the old-fashioned light water reactor, like we have and like the world has, and like NuScale, their small modular reactor is just a scaled-down light water reactor. It's nothing fancy, nothing. It's just smaller. And it's great because it can't melt down because the surface area to volume ratio is now so high that it just bleeds off energy, can't melt down. And NRC knows how to license one of those. They don't know how to license this other stuff. NRC, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they've never licensed a thorium reactor.
I see.
They don't have the people that know anything about it. So when everyone talks about these new reactors, like, those are years out because NRC will not license them until they staff up for it. And they won't staff up. They won't hire people that know this stuff. And there's not that many that do. Until you give them a license application. Right?
Yeah.
Because they're not going to, their budget's shrinking like everyone else's budget.
Yeah.
So to me, the small modular reactors from NuScale are the best ones because they're a light water reactor. And it's like, hey, we know how to do that. Piece of cake. And their design has already been approved by NRC.
They're the best just because they're understood and we can get permits for them.
Right. Absolutely. And we don't have a lot of time to waste, dinking around for 20 more years while we decide what we're going to do. Okay. We can do this now.
So if I could summarize what I believe I've heard from you, it would go something like nuclear energy is a perfectly good energy source, safe, not only in the present, but into the future to create a baseline source of electricity. The problems are not scientific. They're not physics. They're not chemistry. The problems are political. So is that a fair summary of where we
Absolutely.
Are?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm thinking about this, and I think part of the thing is, so in listening to you as a layperson, you did a great job of explaining things in layperson kind of way, but it's still complicated compared to burning a piece of coal. So I can remember being a kid at my grandparents' place, and they heated their house with a little coal fireplace.
Right.
And it was easy to understand. Okay, here's coal. You throw it in there. You put a match on it. Gets hot enough. It starts burning. It makes heat. Everybody understands that. Almost nobody understands nuclear energy. And I think
because it actually involves Einsteinian physics. Okay, yeah. But the thing to understand is that there's lots of people who do know it. I mean, you know, I've spent my entire career doing this, so of course I know this piece of cake. It's not taught in school. I think it should be, really. I mean, if you want to teach science, energy is the best way to teach science,
yeah,
right?
Right.
Because it involves everything, geology, physics, chemistry, I mean, the whole bit, history, society. I mean, it's the best way to do it. So you teach about all the energy sources. And when you get to the safety, you notice, my God, in the last 5 years, nuclear has killed one person only because they fell off scaffolding and broke their neck. It had nothing to do with radiation. Wind has killed about 140 people. I mean, wow, my God, that's 100 times more than nuclear. Solar's killed about, 200 people. Hydro is, worldwide has killed, 1,000. But in the United States, just like nuclear, no one from, accidents, falling off of things. Okay. Because we have FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, that actually inspects dams and will shut a dam down if there's a crack in the cement. We just did that up here near Priest Rapids a few years ago. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, they're very strong bodies in this country. They will shut you down for nothing. So I hate the anti-nukes that say, oh, the NSC's in the pocket of industry. Oh, the industry wishes that because the industry gets fined and shut down all the time for minor things that no one else would shut down for. And like I say, Fukushima, if Fukushima's Nuclear Regulatory Commission was as strong as ours, there would have been no disaster.
So one of the things you point to there is there are people who know nuclear energy backwards and forwards, inside and out, with long histories about it. One of the problems we've got in our country, our culture right now, is there's a crisis in trust. It's like nobody trusts anybody. Right. And so I'm sure that somebody listening to you talk is like, oh, well, yeah, well, he did his career in nuclear and he's in the pocket of the nuclear lobby, et cetera, et cetera.
I wish. Again, I never worked for the industry. Okay. I've always been academia. Half of my career was at universities. Half was at, like Los Alamos and PNNL. And those are not industry at all. Yeah. They're feds. I mean, they're scared of doing anything wrong. So I've nothing to do with industry.
Yeah. No. Really, well, so. Well, I'm, right.
However, I've been called a shill for the industry so many times, it's laughable.
Okay. Yeah. But because that's related to this crisis of trust that we're dealing with.
Yep.
Is that people start off with an ideological point of view. Then if somebody who is an expert, quote unquote, says something that this ideologically driven person disagrees with, then they have to find some reason to not listen to this expert. Right. And that's where we're living. And hopefully conversations like we've had will go some step towards bringing a little bit of daylight into the issues around nuclear power in particular.
Right, right. I mean, and that'd be great. And I'm not going to hold my breath.
Well,
because I've been doing this too long.
Well, I agree with you. There's no point in holding breath.
You have to keep being out there. You have to keep being out and say, listen, if you want to know, I'll tell you. If you don't want to know, fine. Okay. But if you want to know, we've been doing this. I mean, I've spent 10 years on projects and came up with answers and they were totally ignored. It's like, really? I just spent 10 years during this finding the answer you wanted and you don't care for it because it doesn't sound not the way you want it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the pandemic was perfect for this. Fauci never said anything wrong. I mean, I've heard all this stuff about, no, he wasn't wrong about masks. Okay. You could always hear the weasel words in what he was saying.
Right.
And he was like, well, given what we know now, the blah, 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 blah. Well, we learned things that we didn't know at the beginning. And so you have to adjust. I mean, this is what everything about science is about.
Right.
You learn new things and you adjust your theories.
Yeah.
To match them. So, but the problem is, expert is a bad word now. And, which is really sad because that's what made us a great nation. I mean, absolutely a great nation was the scientific freedom.
Well, we're about to finish up here, Jim. Anything you want to wrap up with here in particular?
No, except that everything the listener thinks they know about nuclear is probably wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Because they've got it from sources that have a desire to misinform about nuclear. That's just the way it is. Now, in the early days, it was a handful of people. We kind of know who they were. But later on, the fossil fuel industry absolutely had campaigns against, you know, against nuclear because they saw it as a threat. Because it is. I mean, it's a better form of energy, a safer form of energy than fossil fuel, environmentally safer. So that, you know, yeah, there's a big thing. I mean, even, you know, I've been a lifelong member to Greenpeace, to Sierra Club, for, you know, NRDC for ages, but Sierra Club had a $50 million grant from the gas industry. It's like, wow, okay. So of course they don't like nuclear. Yeah. So, you know, and that would be okay. I don't mind funding if you actually pay attention to science, but if you're going to ignore science, then we're in deeper than anyone realizes.
Well, that's an idea for me for some future research and possibly a future program, and that is, to what extent has the fossil fuel industry had its fingers in the effort to discredit nuclear power? I mean, that sounds like a subject that hasn't gotten much daylight, and no. it seems like a really interesting subject. Well,
yes. Cool.
Well, Jim, you know, I love talking with you. I love your sense of humor. I understand, I think, about 85 to 87% of what you say pretty clearly from a layperson. And here's the thing. I trust you on the rest of it.
Thank you. That's great.
Okay, Jim. Thanks for being with us and have a great day.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
So many thanks to Dr. Konka for joining us today and for bringing his expertise to us in layperson terms on topic that it's difficult for laypersons to be conversant on, and therefore a temptation to allow our ideologies to drive our conclusions. For me, it's clear, given the intermittency of renewable energy, that we're going to need nuclear power or something very much like it as a baseline source to take us through those times when renewable energy may not be available. I'll underscore that this is a change of perspective for me that's been going on for the last several years. You can contact me at john@ccltacoma.org for comments on this program or to make suggestions for future programs. The CCL part is for Citizens Climate Lobby. I'm an activist with Citizens Climate Lobby. Check it out. Bunch of good people. Join up or find another organization if you aren't already attached to join your voice with others. This program, along with all other locally produced Radio Tacoma programs, can be found on the KTAH website under Programming. So, until we talk again, remember, as always, live like the mountain is out. Take care now.